my ex-wife, she left me in a way that was devastating. I was her assistant, and we had this really killer trick. You know, we had this big box, and she'd put me in the box and spin it around, and I'd disappear. And then she'd make me reappear, and it was a showstopper. I mean, it knocked the socks off the audience's balls. Anyway, one night, we're doing the trick, get in the box, disappear, only this time I reappear in a divorce lawyer's office.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey, it's a Two Magicians, One Mic. Simon broke his arm. Yeah!
Well, broken is a strong word.
It's highly unusable.
Simon non-trivially damaged his arm. Simon tore the ligament in his right shoulder, which is obviously his dominant hand, because that's the way that works.
Simon tore a ligament.
Doesn't quite have the same ring to it, but it is at least factually accurate.
I just I woke up to a lovely text message from a mutual friend of ours, John Armstrong, and you somehow got an entire cruise line to not allow performers to do extracurricular activities while they're working.
And just in case, let's not mention the names of any companies or anything else, because that could, I don't know if that's sensitive. Yeah, I was on a cruise gig. Everything was great. They had a little tropical paradise beach barbecue thing going on, which was great. They had water sports as part of that, optional if you're into it, which included a banana boat. Which, for those not familiar, it's a long inflatable thing.
I just love that all this happened on a banana boat,
which is a thing that I'd never heard of until a couple of cruises ago where I first encountered one.
And now you'll never forget it.
Unforgettable. And they're great fun. You sit on top of them. It's big, like a big inflatable hot dog, basically, rather than a banana, that six people sit on. It's reasonably stable, gets towed behind a speedboat. Through the water, wahey! And eventually it probably tips over from the boat turning, and that's half the fun. Except when it tipped over and all six of us on the banana boat.
I didn't know there was more than one.
Oh, no, six people. I mean, that's why. The injury wouldn't have happened if it had just been me. Because, ironically, because everyone was being so safe and responsible, everyone had their life jackets on, everyone had their helmets on, everyone signed their waivers. And as we fell into the water, I just happened to fall slightly before someone else who basically fell on top of me and their helmeted head smashed into my shoulder. Which was just blunt force impact trauma enough to partially tear one of the tendons in my right shoulder. I didn't know that at the time. I thought it was just a bad bruise, but then x-rays revealed.
And then you had to go do a magic show.
Yeah. Boat. That was one of the more challenging experiences of my career. Luckily, thank the freaking universe that this happened the day after my first show had happened and gone well. So at least I had it. Was a case that you already had one in the can, because that's always something I think about, particularly on long cruises. You're the person with the least to do on the entire ship. Mm-hmm. You have the cushiest gig in many ways.
And yet your face is on the wall.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of pressure. Also because often you're on the ship for sometimes many days before you have to do a show. So by the time that first show rocks around, you've got one shot to justify your existence to everyone who's been seeing you, going, why is this guy here? Mm-hmm. What's he? Is he just a waste of space?
A lot of times you're on for like 10 days.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I got on in November. And I'm like, sorry, I was doing a ship in November, I should preface. And I get the schedule. And I got on a Thursday. And I'm like, oh, that's good. I'll be doing a show tonight. And then I looked, and it was a Thursday 7 days from now.
Oh, so wow. That's extra bad.
I have nothing to do for seven days. And you have to be good in 7 days.
Yeah. But also, the thing that I've been finding really stressful about them is you've got one shot most of the time. You've got that one show.
Yeah, bam. That's the worst.
I never thought I'd find myself missing the Macau work schedule, where if one show is a bit B-grade, there's seven more coming right up, and you'll eventually nail it. But yeah, on a ship, it's that one, bam.
Yeah.
All the pressure is on that pinhead of that show. And luckily, I'd done that. I'd got through that first hurdle literally the night before. So people knew who I was, knew I didn't suck, had gone, oh, wow, that was great. And the second show was about 3 days after that. And so
you show back up slightly differently.
Look, it's okay. Sent the agency a message, just giving me a heads up. But I immediately, the second the injury happened, like even while I was sitting there being first aided by the beach medical team, I was already thinking, okay, what can I do? What can I do with one arm? What can I do with my left arm and just like my right hand? Because luckily, it could have been so much worse in so many ways so easily because I still had, even from the moment of the injury when the swelling was the worst, I pretty much could move from the elbow down. So I still had full wrist, hand, finger control. I imagine if it had been a wrist injury or an elbow, wrist, hand, or I mean, for God's sake, you know, neck, back, spine, head, right? A thousand ways it could have been so much worse. Mm-hmm. And so immediately I was going to, all right, what can we do? What can be reblocked? What can I just not do and have to replace with other material? How can I? And there were some things I just had to do, things like change the camera angles on a few things that I'd normally do up at face level, but I couldn't just physically reach up there anymore. So I did down at waist level.
Crotch level.
Yeah, crotch magic. I wasn't going to say it, but yeah, that's where it happens.
Old people love crotch magic.
Go to YouTube and Instagram. Most magic filmed at the crotch level.
It really is. That's insane. That's crazy that... Oh, well, the fact that you just kept going kind of says a lot. But you were like me, I would have been, oh, I'm done. Cool.
Yeah, that's it. Magic over.
What country was this in that this happened?
You know what? I can't even remember. I think it was Thailand.
Good.
Might have been Cambodia. Some Southeast Asian tropical paradise.
It had a nice beach to it.
Yeah, it was a great beach. Yeah. Some island. I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, that says a lot. You were saying that it mentioned... You were thinking about, taking your own advice or taking something having a new perspective on...
The thing I was thinking about, because it's like so many things in life, you don't realize what you're doing that's different for everyone else if you're just focused on doing a thing. And so immediately I was going, all right, okay, what can I do? What works? What won't work? How do I still get a 45-minute show out of this that's good? And I realized instantly that even though... it was going to be tougher, I'd probably have to ditch some good material and replace it with some less polished material. Plus, there was going to be the fumbling and adjusting position. And if I need to use my right hand for something, I kind of need to lean forward because I still can't really move my right shoulder much while it's healing. But I realized that anything the show was going to lack in polish and professionalism, it was more than going to make up for in kind of fascinating novelty value. And to a lesser degree, sympathy value. Because, yeah, you have the sympathy vote, sure, but... And this was the thing I was thinking about. Say you were going to go see a great performer who you really admire, do their great show, or you found out one night of the tour they had to do it with one arm. You'd be so much more interested to go to the one arm night. That's in a heartbeat. I'd pick that. I would probably also want to see them in their best. Yeah. But like the novelty value of that, seeing a good person at a skill. Have to do it in an unusual and difficult situation. It's literally unique.
My father has been doing it his whole life. He has only two fingers on his left, on his right arm.
Yeah.
And so hasn't been the novelty, but that has been, you know, something that has certainly made him stand out as a performer of, hey, that guy has a funny arm.
Yeah,
and let's see what happens with this show.
Massive. And, you know, look at Richard Turner, Marty Gilbert, sure. Renee Levand, right?
Yeah, they're all amazing.
People with ability challenges. It adds so much to the show. And it really did. It was honestly probably a better show because you can't fake that. That's a real unique moment that they're present for that's never going to happen exactly that way again.
Yeah, that's what makes a show like that special. That's what, like, in my case, if I'm on a ship, it was like crazy rocky. It was a very dangerous time to be doing a show, and they had me fill in 2 hours before because the dance show couldn't dance, but for some reason it was safe enough to do a magic show. But everybody who showed up was, I was kind of nervous, and then I started the show, and you realize that the audience is there. They're like, purposely didn't go to their rooms to see a show, and they... are excited to see what this could be and how it could fail and how it could be exciting. Because it's why what happens with live theater. It's the reason you see something live because it can't be duplicated. It's something special for that moment. And certainly, and it keeps it interesting for you as the performer too, something you've done a bajillion times. Now this obstacle is thrown at you.
Yeah.
And so that's cool. I give you credit for still doing it. And I just love that email John and I got from our agent of, hey, don't go on any extracurricular activities.
It was better because it was, I think 3 days later, an email got sent around to the entire agency. So this is hundreds of performers worldwide.
Our agency is based in the UK, just for reference.
Yeah, but they have offices in Australia, the US, I think a bunch of countries. It's a global agency. And an agency-wide email sent out going, just so you ever know that this particular cruise line has now banned water sports and other high-risk activities for guest entertainers.
So cancel your rock climbing.
Yeah. And it mentioned in the email there was recently an incident with a banana boat.
I love that it was specifically a banana boat.
They didn't mention me by name, but they mentioned the vehicle.
We all know who it was.
Which is the first time I've ever had a policy created because of me.
Which... when I got that email, wasn't surprised. I texted John. I'm like, yep, that's about right.
It was standard. Yep.
I want to thank everybody who's donated. We got a nice bunch of donations last month. If I could pull up the name, I'm going to give a nice little thank you. But I think I'm going to do something where if you already are a donate to our Patreon, or if you donate like a one time, we're going to send you a nice little sticker with our new logo that nobody on Facebook liked, but we liked. So we're going to use it somehow. Like, we updated the logo on, you know, iTunes and whatnot. And
for those playing Two Magicians, One Mic Bingo, new logo, tick the box.
Finally did it, guys. Finally did it.
We've got so many new logos now.
Yeah. But I can't find the gentleman's name. Right. Vamp for me. I should have had this. I forgot to put this in my notes. Let me see.
I'll give you
a PayPal. While you go hunting,
I'll give the rest of the theory that we talked about earlier.
Sure.
Which was with that. So there was a show way back in the US, Top Chef, was one of these BS reality TV, fake drama, all that crap, cooking contests. And then they did a spin-off called Top Chef Masters, which I'm not really a cooking show guy. It's not really my thing. But Top Chef Masters I loved because, number one, the premise was master chefs, experienced, successful, capable chefs who had already proven themselves, brought in to compete against each other. So first of all, you've removed any of those, the potential vicarious disappointment of people having their dreams crushed and all that stuff. And also it removes sort of that potential reality TV pseudo-bullying thing. Like, these people have got their stuff together. They know what they're doing. They're fine. And because they're already experienced chefs, how do you challenge them? And the show challenged them by giving them these really bizarre creative challenges. For example, each episode they had a short round and a long round. And the short round one time was prepare an omelette with one hand behind your back. There were other things like prepare an entire meal with just one color. Like, everything has to be orange, yet make it a good meal. Now, for a beginner amateur chef, that's horrible. Like, you're just being mean to them. But for a master chef, that's cool. That's interesting. You're curious to see how they're going to handle that really hard challenge that a mere beginner or average person would really struggle with. And I keep thinking about that concept when suddenly I find myself with one arm that's fully functional. Yeah. Going, yeah, lean into that. Go with that intrinsic human fascination of watching a skillful person be tested to the limits of their
skill. Funny you bring that up. I'm reading Anthony Bourdain's book still right now, and he mentioned taking a job in some Italian restaurant, and he's just basically saying how boring it could be, very simple ingredients, simple things everybody knows how to make, but he discovered this excitement in it and in the simplicity and in the limitations as compared to, you know, working at a fancy French cuisine or building your own cuisine and having everything at your disposal. Yeah. Sometimes those limitations can be
constraints and
helpful.
Limitations make for more interesting experiences a lot of the time.
Javier was the gentleman who gave us a nice donation. Then we got a bunch of our patron people who are doing monthly, like $1 or $2 a month.
Hey,
thank you so much. We're like now able to like pay our hosting fees, which is so cool.
Nice.
And we're gonna I definitely want to get some stickers out to people. I wanted to get some coffee mugs made too, possibly. So if anybody was interested in that, let me know. Hey. We might do that too. So,
or if we had a cool logo, what should we stick it on that you would like to buy?
I would think a sticker.
My left butt cheek is where we'll stick the logo.
Man, if anybody got a Two Magicians One Mic tattoo, I would be so happy.
Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't even do that myself.
Automatic gold membership? Or do we even have a gold membership?
It's crazy to me. Like, people got Dwight Schrute's face on their left thigh, you know.
Yeah.
Not just one person. Multiple people have done that and shown what's his name, who played Dwight. I'm blanking right now.
Yeah,
and
the guy.
Yeah.
Dwight guy. It's a bit like how Stifler will always be Stifler.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
Whatever the actual actor's name is.
Yeah. Once again, I'm blanking on his name too.
Yeah.
But who's apparently a very nice gentleman. You know, not Stifler at all, which is kind of funny.
I mean, even Stifler wasn't a super bad guy deep down.
No,
he was just kind of a dick on the surface. It was.
What's funny, you go back and
toxic
watch.
Toxic Masculinity 101.
You watch those, like, early 2000s movies, and you see, like, how it's so not hashtag Me Too, and how many things like they couldn't get away
deeply,
with.
Deeply, profoundly, societally toxic at every level.
I put on Scary Movie a couple months ago. I was like, oh, they couldn't do that anymore.
It's great. The world's improving in some ways. It's going to shit in others. But hey, that's not the topic of conversation.
Hey, there's always money in the banana boat.
But
you know what movie I did see was Stan and Ollie. It was about Laurel and Hardy.
Oh, right.
But what was so cool about it, and the ironically, John C. Reilly was at Booby Trap a day before I saw it, and I totally forgot this movie came out. And he saw the show. I went up and said hello just briefly. And because he's a very shy guy, quiet guy, but I did a trick with my dog, and he didn't recognize me until he saw my dog. He's like, "Oh yeah, hey, that was fun." But that's a side note. But then anyway, the next day saw Stan and Ollie, and it was such a good look at kind of old school entertainment, but also like what happens to you in this longevity of a career, like in talking specifically citing finality and. How does you have a great career, but how does it end if you're kind of fizzling away a little bit? You know, what does that mean? What does that mean for legacy? What does that mean for friendship? I highly recommend it. It was good. It's a very simple film too. Nothing crazy. And I loved that how they start it basically in the last 10 years of their life. They don't go, they met this way. You don't see the origin story. They start at the middle, which is such a great concept because like biopics can just be so boring sometimes.
Or much like superhero origin stories again.
Yeah. It's like, we get it, Spider-Man, we get it.
You've got bitten by a thing, okay.
Although I did like the new animated Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse. They did a nice job of going, you know what happens.
Yeah, I heard it was really good. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, you hate superhero movies, and I think you'd enjoy it. Like, the animation alone is just beautiful.
Yeah, it does, from the bits I've seen, what I've heard, it looks like it might be one of those rare ones that I like.
Really well done.
Which is ironic, because I love many superhero comics. I find the movies play to the least interesting, crappiest, dumbest parts of the comics and not the best things that make them that I love about them. But hey, what do you do? Not everyone's the target market for everything.
No, you're not. You're not for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We've discussed this.
I don't think anyone's for the DC Cinematic Universe.
They're coming back with the Wonder Woman and
Wonder Woman was pretty good.
I guess Aquaman was decent. I heard mixed reviews. I never saw it. Yeah. Wonder Woman was good. I wrote down in my little notes of things to talk about knowing when to stop pursuing something.
Oh yeah.
And knowing when something's done.
Yeah.
And I think I touched on this a little bit in the last episode.
Are you trying to tell me something, Nick?
Simon, I got another guy. Bring him in. his name's Simone Coronet. He's going to take over for you. He's actually going to take over for me, and you guys can just talk about falling into the water from banana boats. No, in terms of like, I think I mentioned it of, you know, a certain gig I was pursuing a lot and then suddenly they're not giving more work on it. Something I worked on for about 5 years to get and the last year doing a decent amount of work with it and thought it was going to lead to more opportunities and they're like, no, we're done. And there's a part of me that just wants to keep like emailing them and bugging them. Hey, remember me? But maybe it's. There's something in about accepting that something's over and this is done. It's not meant to be, or you had your good run with it. And my buddy who's going through same company, similar situation, we both were just talking about it yesterday going, you know what? It's probably just purely a numbers thing. If we're not getting 5 stars every single time, like these other guys they're comparing us to are, why would they want to spend the money on a guy who's getting 4 stars every time?
Yeah.
If they're clearly going by ratings and, there's something kind of freeing about accepting that and moving on.
I think it feels like something we talked about a while back, but I constantly think about that old pseudo prayer, whether it's to a deity of your choice or just to the universe or to yourself, but wishing for the strength to change the things you can, the temperance to accept the things you can't, and the wisdom to tell the difference between the two. And for me, it always, the doozy is that last one, the wisdom to tell the difference. And it's such a human thing of going, now, is this one of those times I should be praying for strength to fight on and keep going?
Sure.
Or is this one of those times I should be praying for temperance to deal with it and move on and let it go? And it's so tough. You just never really know for sure.
Yeah.
You just have to make a judgment call. And it's one of the things I find myself reflecting or meditating on the most about so many situations in life of, is this a strength gig or a temperance gig right now, this moment I'm facing in my life as a human being?
And I'm a person who doesn't let stuff go. That's the reason I got booked at the Castle. I emailed them for 4 years, and then I got here. The first thing I did when I moved to LA was go find the entertainment director and get to know him. But if I hadn't not let that go, I wouldn't be working at a place like that. And that's an example of many of the regular gigs I do.
Yeah.
But also knowing when it's done and knowing when, you know, this isn't supposed to happen anymore. Yeah. And it's tough. Really tough for me to walk away from stuff. Like, I took Japanese for 5 years, 3 years longer than I should have, just because I'm like, yeah, I like Japanese. I should keep doing this. I'm going to use this one day. Never use Japanese at all outside. Although I take that back. I did a show in Tokyo and did it in Japanese. So
yeah, there you go.
It worked out.
Whereas I ironically use Chinese all the time without ever having thought I would. But yeah, the wisdom to tell the difference. That's the thing I keep thinking on and reflecting about.
Yeah,
which moment is this? What's the right path? Sometimes it can change. You're in temperance mode. Let's deal with this. And then it becomes too much. And you go, no, you know what? It's time to draw a line and make a stand now.
Yeah, because I do find myself judging people who give up too easily or don't push hard enough. But then other times you see people that are pushing too hard. And I've definitely been both of those
examples. Let this thing die. This is not a thing that is worth keeping going. But
I was in a band for a while, and we were pretty good. And it was one of those things of, do I keep this alive? Do I keep this happening?
Jimmy quit. Joey got married.
Well, that's the thing. They got married. They had kids.
Yeah.
You're like, this isn't a realistic option anymore. This is just a fun little side project. And even that, it's not even a side project. It's done. It was a nice blip in my history of life, and that's fine. That's what it is. But, it's especially like, you know, in the day and age where we've talked about failure to death on this, but when you're told, you know, if this doesn't work out, you're a failure. Yeah. That's always kind of in the back of your mind. When really it's like, no, this was just an experience to learn something new.
And sometimes it's the best possible thing that a thing fails, because it leads you in that rebound from it and going, well, shit, what do I do now? Sure. You end up discovering something way better that you never would have even imagined if you hadn't been forced to. You never know. It's that whole thing about the Zen parable about the farmer and his son with wild horses. We talked about that.
I would remember a wild horse parable.
So this is, I heard this from Eugene Berger, RIP.
Good man.
Great man. One of my earliest.
I feel like we've been bringing him up almost every episode because he was just like the Yoda of magic in many ways.
He really was. I mean, I was so lucky to read a bunch of his stuff really early on in my magic journey, and it really affected the way I thought about all of it, of actually giving a damn about it, realizing it can be powerful. It doesn't have to be hacky and hokey and easy and dumb. But he, in one of his books, he wrote this, paraphrased this story about a horse farmer. One day, one of his horses escapes into the forest, and all the neighbors go, oh man, that sucks. And the farmer, being a wise student of Zen, goes, oh no, everyone says, oh, that's very bad. And he goes, and it's snappier in Chinese, obviously. He goes, who can say what's good or bad? And then the next day, the horse comes back from the forest, bringing with it, it's like made a bunch of friends with a bunch of amazing purebred wild horses from the forest that are super valuable. And all the neighbors go, wow, that's really good. And the farmer goes, who can say what is good or bad? And then so the next day, the farmer's son, while trying to break in and train the wild horses to get them ready to be useful, one of them throws him off and he flies to the air and breaks his leg. Super topical. Maybe he just tore the ligament in his shoulder, had to go in a sling and send out a company-wide email.
The horse was shaped like a banana boat.
Exactly. And his son breaks his arm, and all the neighbors go, oh, that's really bad. And the farmer goes, who can say what's really good or bad? And then the next week, a war breaks out in a neighboring province. And so
pissing me off.
A lot's happening. And so the militia comes round, forcibly conscripting all able-bodied young men to go and basically get killed in battle because the Chinese military at the time did not have good tactics and procedures in their clan warfare. And but because he's got a broken arm, they pass over his son, so he survives. Mm-hmm. And all the neighbors go, ah, that's really good. And need we say what the farmer's reply was? And it's just that reminder that apparently bad things can, in the longer view, eventually lead you to good things, and vice versa. Apparently good things can end up leading to much worse things. And you just never really know. You never know what, in the long view, when you look back in hindsight, years in the future, an apparently terrible, terrible, shitty situation that does suck, while being bad, may actually lead you somewhere good. And if you keep an eye open for that good place it might be leading you, you're more likely to find it and see it, if there is one. Also, some things just suck as well. There is yin to the yang. Some things are just crappy.
So that whole parable is maybe helpful.
Maybe. That's the maybe. You know what?
It's not, who's
that's,
to say?
That's the only true and honest advice in life, is maybe. Nothing is ever certain. Mm-hmm. Anyone who proclaims, this is what to do, is full of shit.
That was a very Zen thing. And my buddy Taylor gave me a great idea for the podcast that I think I'm going to start doing.
Yeah.
It's called Simon Says. And
oh God,
I have to go back to an old episode, find something you said, or find something similar. And you have to decide for yourself if it's something you've said or if it's just quoted from some like random Zen book or something like that. I forgot to do it for this episode.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I'm excited to do it.
God. That's actually, I was talking about that with some friends recently about one of the many things that I've really learned from magic about life that's been a really useful lesson is really deeply understanding just how utterly unreliable all perception and memory is. Perception in the moment, we know how deeply unreliable it is. Memory, even less reliable than the already unreliable perception. And now I've found that I find myself less likely to say things like, well, what happened was blah, blah, blah. I'm more likely to say, what I remember happening was, with that very clear assumption implicit that what I remember is absolutely not necessarily what really happened. It never is for anybody. Human memory is, including ours, is utterly unreliable.
I can't remember what book it is. It might be Malcolm Gladwell, but just they did a study of first-person point of view of witnessing a crime or something, and it's different every time, completely. And it's not reliable at all.
And even when going nowadays, there's sort of, I've noticed I have a different subtext in my words that I often should probably point out to people, because if you haven't had that same experience, you won't have it, where, say, I'll be telling a story, and I'll be saying something, well, I saw this, I was doing this thing, and then I looked up and saw this. Implicit in that statement, I saw it, is an understanding that that absolutely does not mean it definitely really happened. I am absolutely clear that anything I absolutely remember seeing, at best, is about 90% likely to have been exactly what really happened, because perception and memory are unreliable.
Well, because the memory is just constantly replaying the tape over and over in a slightly different way, so it gets a little bit jaded and wonky.
Oh, completely. But most people don't realize that. The phrase seeing is believing is one of the most damaging, stupid, naive phrases, but most people still think that way.
Believing is seeing.
Hey. But back on the Simon Says idea, recently there's been a bunch of times where someone has told me something I've said, and I'll go, I do not remember saying that at all, but I completely believe. I have no memory of that. I completely believe you.
This whole podcast is a hoax. It's just a front.
It's all a setup.
It's not real.
I knew those $2 donations seemed too good to be true.
By the way, Patreon, give us $2 a month.
You want to.
Only if you want to. I made it all pretty. I went in there and messed it with the Patreon.
We're definitely not doing this for the dollars.
Could be.
Why are we doing this again?
I don't know. Like, I was in an office all day today working in kind of a cool little project that I can't talk about because I signed an NDA. But doing this, rushing this, because then I go out of town for a bunch of days. I'm not complaining about being busy, but this is literally the only day we could do this podcast
to hit our one window
episode release date. And that kind of keeps happening for us, which is good. It forces us to get together. And once again, it comes back to like a constraint. You know, we have a constraint of time a lot of the time to get this out and, stick to our deadline.
Well, didn't we just work out that the next episode we've got a one-day window as well. Yep. That's the only time we're both in town overlapping to record it.
So it's...
In 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. Because
then I go, and then you go, and then I'm back, but then you're gone, but then I go.
Yeah, it's a lot of running around. And I wrote this down, struggling with this last week, just realizing that I'm doing some work for some backstage stuff and helping out in a different type of way for a show. And I'm realizing that my identity is so attached to being a performer a lot of the time that I don't know how to relate to people if they don't know I'm not a performer.
Yeah, interesting.
And it's not like in a public setting. It's in some sort of like a work setting. If they don't see me as X, Y, and Z or having this skill set, I don't know how to relate to them or I don't know how to relate to myself or how to be a person. And it's something I've been working on the past week or two, and it's gotten easier. You know, when I wrote this down, it was a tough couple of days because I guess it's tied a little bit to ego, but it's also tied to something you've been doing or something you've seen yourself as your whole life, and then suddenly you're not seen as that anymore. Yeah. And that shouldn't matter how people perceive you, but I think that's the reason or part of the reason we get up on stage is so people see us in a certain way and so we can express a certain part of ourselves. And if I'm not able to express that part and connect with people on that level, then it messes with me a little bit emotionally. Yeah. And I'm like, who am I? What is this?
Yeah, genuine existential crisis.
Legit.
It's funny, isn't it, that there is like so many things. There is that healthy balance between doing something for your own intrinsic sense, but also we are intrinsically social animals. Other people's opinions do absolutely matter to us. Other people's views of us are just as part of our identity as our own. Like, neither exists without the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I'm thinking about it.
I know, we're just going to sit here and think.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I was, in a way, I think, in a lot of ways, I was so lucky, in hindsight, to only get into magic when I was 18. Because I already had at least a bunch of facets to my self-identity.
You kind of already knew who you were. It's the same thing of like guys like Steve Carell or Stephen Colbert who found fame later in life, who had been working at it a long time but didn't become quote-unquote famous until then.
Yeah.
So they already knew who they were before people started coming up to them or seeing them as that thing.
Well, it's that well-documented phenomenon that child stars often go insane or have serious emotional and mental problems later in life.
Yeah.
Because, that would mess you up, that whole... I mean, I think we've talked about it. I think it's how we started getting existential was literally while traveling, I've had genuine sort of minor existential crises because the idea of who am I, what am I, do I exist, what we... Our own mental model of our existence is all those different things bound up. It's, you know, you exist. We think, therefore, we are and all that jazz. But it's who you are as a friend, as a family member, as a member of society, as your job is part of who you are, your location, your hometown, your where you live. These are all parts of your identity and your sense of existence. And, those can get really messed up if you're traveling all the time.
Yeah, it's being in a different location for a bit does mess with that because it's a weird thing, especially in LA, is that you come here for a specific purpose, at least in our case, more entertainment opportunities, networking, like-minded people. And once you leave that for a while, you forget that that's not everywhere. It's not seen the same way, especially magic. Magic isn't as, this is like the only town where if you say magician, they don't immediately think birthday party.
Yeah.
Which is not putting that down, but,
because we
have many great kid entertainer friends who are awesome at it, but
it's just
it's not what we strive to do.
It's not that I think it's worth it, it's just inaccurate. It's like if you're, it's like if you're an auto mechanic and people think you're a ballet dancer. It's just not worth it. It's just, that's not what I am. That's the wrong mental image of what I am and what I do.
Maybe there are a few of those out there
living
dual lives.
But it's still a separate thing.
I'm blanking on what even my point was, but you talked about identity and location, and location does play a big part of it because I have more confidence in myself here purely for the location base. And it's not an ego thing. It's not I live in LA. I just feel a little bit more at home here than I did when I lived in Florida or even Chicago. I love Chicago, but I could never find, it never felt like a home base to me. It always felt like kind of a transient thing, and I never really could find my roots. Yeah. And, if this was taken away, I've thought about a lot, like, if we left, you know, what would my identity be?
Yeah.
Or how would I be able to, you know, keep up confidence in oneself?
Yeah.
If you're using it, if you're using your identity to exist from certain crutches, for lack of a better term, location, job, whatnot.
Yeah. That's something that all the travel schedule has really made me think about in what is probably healthy, is it's forced me to really go deeper into my core for my sense of identity and existential nature, which is probably a good thing. And also, coming to LA did that a bit, because I knew coming here, it was such a machine driven by superficiality and BS.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to maintain a sense of true self here. It was Hamlet, right? To thine own self be true, I think. Unless I've got my references wrong.
It's Shakespeare.
Yeah, something Shakespearean somewhere.
You wrote a lot of things.
Some guy wrote a thing. And I remember thinking about that a lot coming here, about really wanting to kind of get a sense of my core identity and values, because I knew they were going to probably take a beating one way or another by coming here, particularly in this industry, which is so based on superficial BS all the time, on whether professionally or personally or both or everything else.
It's tricky. You need to maintain a sense of zen and gratefulness. And it's kind of funny. Like, the past 2 weeks have been a little bit slower, and I'm just kind of re-bringing up some projects, some things we work on, other things that, you know, writing something with a buddy of mine. And then all of a sudden you get crazy busy again, and you have to kind of focus and go, all right, was I just doing this to fill time, or is this something I'm passionate about?
Yeah.
Is this important to me? And also, like, when you have that kind of downtime, you're kind of reminded of, you think a lot about, okay, why am I doing this? What is the whole point of all this? Why are we here? Why am I in LA? Why am I paying these prices?
Why did we come here?
But then I have days like today where I got to work on a fun project, and it's like, oh, okay, that's what it's working towards. And you have to find happiness in both, and getting back to your superficiality, what you were talking about here, which you see a lot in LA, which honestly doesn't happen as much as I thought. I see through it so quickly now. Someone can say one sentence to me, and I'm like, all right, you're a BSer. See you later. It's,
you sort of evolve that radar from experience.
It's amazing how quick I have it now. And you can see when someone's being genuine, or see when they're trying to get something from you. In our case, people just want to get into the magic castle, you know, and so it's a weird little blessing and a curse we have to have that nice little luxury, and something we've worked hard to be a part of, a community we've worked hard to be a part of. But you see a lot of, you know, people in this town trying to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So true.
So true. True is life. I don't know. I don't have anything else to talk about. I went through all my things.
My thing was basically the arm. What else is?
Oh, you got a teaching thing because you talked about teaching on the last episode, right?
Oh, really? Yeah.
It came from the podcast, right?
What about the teaching thing?
You talked for like an hour.
Yeah, I went full teaching.
I went and edited that episode. And I'm like, I don't talk at all in this one.
Simon rants for an hour.
Good
teaching.
And a bad thing. But that's good to know. People listen and were intrigued by what you had to say.
What happened?
I thought you went on happened to be passing through Australia. Did
a workshop thing.
Wasn't scheduled. Was that part of this?
It wasn't. It was coincidental.
See, I just thought, podcast was helping your life.
Oh, God, no. No. Please.
You could have said yes to placate, to make me feel like this
is
all worth it.
Come on, if this podcast stands for one thing, it's raw honesty and realness.
Raw realness.
That was a friend of mine who runs a magic shop/school down there. So I was coming to town, a really good friend, and asked if I'd teach a workshop, because he's looking for events to run there, wants to build its reputation. And again, I've got so many kind of theories on magic and very, very practical, solid, applicable theories that I never really get around to teaching, because I'm too busy doing all the stuff to ever think about actually franchising or merchandising or whatever, organizing teaching sessions. And so he organized it, and a bunch of people came along, and it was actually really good. As I did go on about for an hour, I love teaching so much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we know.
It came up. And I really respect teachers. I admire. Did I come? I admire teachers.
Well, you tore apart a few teachers, but I think rightfully so.
Yeah.
Rightfully
well, overall, so. Right?
The respect for teaching.
The greatest heroes we have. Except the shitty ones. They suck. They're the worst. The good ones. They're the greatest.
The good ones. Well, we have to go to like a monthly magic meetup.
We
thingy.
Do. We're off to work on making our acts and skills better.
It's literally a pizza party with magicians, kind of a close secret group, but all people that are great and I'm honored to be a part of.
Well, it's good because it's that attitude of keep constantly improving your stuff, knowing that nothing is so good it can't use some improvement, and getting feedback from other people who have some interesting points of view to bounce it around on that.
Yeah, it's funny taking, because we all will like post something in our little group, our private group, and then we'll all see notes about it. And it's interesting the things you choose to agree with and disagree with, but you're like, oh, I disagree with that, but they made a point. And do I really want to change that or tweak it enough? And it's good to hear, it's good to have an outlet to get multiple opinions when you're asking for it, you know? So it's helpful.
Yeah. All feedback is useful feedback as long as you're sense of self isn't so fragile that it hurts you and messes with your head. And that's the big rub.
Everybody in this group is somebody that can take criticism, and that's, they were selected for that reason.
It's funny, it's one of those many big dividing lines of how you can subcategorize people, and particularly in performing arts you see that instantly. People who are openly enthusiastic about criticism because it gives them something that might make them better or might be useless, but that's fine, versus people who feel hurt by it, attacked by it, offended by it. The latter ones tend to suck because they haven't spent any of their career getting better, because they haven't been taking criticism. They haven't been looking harshly and constructively at their selves and their stuff.
Take the note. Don't just take it.
Seek it out.
Yeah.
Like, actively look for the notes. The ones that hurt. Yeah. The ones that make you feel, ouch, those are the ones that are probably going to make you a lot better.
I had such an Armstrong moment seeing a friend of mine at the castle in a recent vicinity. I won't cite.
Yeah.
Did a great job. Loved it. But there was a couple things that happened that I so badly wanted him to say, did you have any notes?
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be the one to bring it up, because I hate it when people give me notes and I don't ask for it.
Yeah.
Just because you may not be in the right state of mind.
Yeah.
It's always accepted, but you got to be in the right state of mind to accept it and kind of process it. But something very specific happened. A girl in the front row started hiccuping, and he didn't call it out. Didn't even notice, I don't think, in a very intimate setting. And I'm like, no, this is a gift.
Well, and also that, like, the biggest note there is that you're not paying enough attention to the audience.
Yep, that was it right there.
Really,
I'm like,
gotta be
you
present.
Don't have to be a crazy, funny improviser. You don't have to be, you know, Don Rickles making jokes based on that. But just to say, don't worry, we'll be done soon. You know, please don't pass out. Just anything.
You got a hiccup situation. Don't worry, we've all been there.
Yeah, and it happened a few times throughout the performance as well, where people would say something and you just kind of blaze past it.
Yeah.
Or the way he was presenting it allowed people to say things. And no, you got to shut that down. You have to establish that you're in control, even though it's like a conversational setting.
Well, unless you are overtly seeking their interaction, which is also a potentially good choice.
Totally,
as long as you made the choice and are ready
to
work with that.
A choice wasn't made.
Yeah.
That's really was it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is something – the show itself was great. I'm not criticizing the performance, but little things like that kind of drive me bonkers. And you want people to go, oh, did you have any thoughts, any notes? And yes, I had some thoughts, but it's okay. It's okay. Just me being unnecessarily judgmental, and that's fine.
Well, I mean, it's necessary if you want to actually make something brilliant. That's the level of obsessive analytical judgment this stuff takes.
Do you want this to be good, or do you want it to be brilliant? You know?
Yeah. Are you
for
content,
lack of a better term?
Are you okay with it being just okay?
Mm-hmm.
If so, all right, cool. Have a nice life. I wish you the best, but we have nothing to talk about.
Yeah. I was talking, once again, bringing up my buddy Taylor. He's saying he just did an MC event, and the guy, he just destroyed, did this corporate MC thing, which is not an easy thing to do, to stand out and make everybody feel welcome. And he said it went really, really well, and I wouldn't normally say that. But then the booker, or the guy who was running the event, still comes up to him and goes, oh, that was great. So do you do this for a living? You know, do you do this full time? And just the concept that people don't have, like, to get to that point, for him to destroy and do a good job took years and years of practice. Yeah. And the concept of it, quote unquote, like you said, being brilliant, takes that work and effort, and it's kind of, in a weird way, a compliment for them to go, do you do this full time, without realizing that you made it look effortless. Because I think in a weird way that is a compliment, if you don't take that too personally.
Yeah. The only problem is it's a compliment that's potentially damaging because it means you're not getting credit for the actual value you've brought.
And that brings it back to the Zen thing. It's okay.
Well, that's exactly the tree falling in the woods, right? Mm-hmm. If you are brilliant due to decades of work and dedication, but no one realizes that and thinks it's just natural talent. How is that the same thing? And yes, no, it depends on your point of view, yada, yada.
Yeah, we've gone through that rabbit hole before.
We've gone down
there. Well, anyway, thanks for listening. Hey, support us on the Patreon. Give us a buck or two a month if you want. Write us a nice little review on the iTunes there, the Stitcher, or we're on Spotify. I forgot we're on Spotify. We're on Spotify.
Or send us tweets. We'll reply to them.
Yeah, tweets, emails. We've gotten a few good ones. So, yeah, please reach out. Any questions, comments, fan mail, or hate mail.
Let us know if you agreed or disagreed. As we've seen, there was that controversial episode a while back that we got some constructive disagreements that were appreciated and useful.
I love it.
View.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in the future, in the first of the month. These episodes, just so you know, come out in the 1st and the 15th. That's what we're striving for, because everybody thinks they're just random. I'm like, no, just look. It's either the 1st or the 15th. There's always a 1st or 15th of every month,
and
I've
we'll
discovered.
Make it, even if that means sitting on a phone from two sides of Mexico going over at each other in a horrible travesty of podcasting.
As one of our fans of ours goes, I hated that episode.
another one I swear said, I couldn't get through it. I tried. Nice. I love you guys, but I couldn't get through that one.
Yeah. But I looked at the downloads, and, well, I guess that doesn't really show us who listened the whole time. Yeah. But still, a lot of people did download it, which was, I applaud them for their effort.
Curiosity will get you a long way.
So if anybody wants to just hear a taste of it, listen to a couple minutes and then go, this is really, really annoying. Okay, everybody, have a nice week. We'll see you soon.
Peace out.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemic.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs, @twomagiciansonemic. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.